This cup of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you would like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustrations by Toba Ushii.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
T. Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Darren Moser, sitting in the center chair this week. I'm joined by my co-host Daniel Prue, sitting at Tactical, and Philip Gilfis at Ops.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own.
Daniel, raise the shields.
Your culture will adapt.
Philip, rotate the phaser frequencies. Use the upper EM band. Keep guessing. Don't give him a chance to adapt.
Is it working? Is it working?
Oh, it's okay. It was just one of Mr. Worf's like pranks, you know, sensor pranks. We're actually fine. False alarm, everyone.
Wait, is this your new thing of doing battle drills in order to make us like you more? We told you that doesn't work.
I thought you would enjoy it when I shifted to a 4-shift rotation, but everyone just seems to be unhappy.
It's too many shifts. It's too many shifts. We just like 3 shifts. Let's just leave it there.
Fine. Okay. 5 shifts. Okay. There are 5 shifts.
They're all 5 shifts.
And is it Dan or Daniel?
One is my name. The other is not.
Well, today on Earl Grey, we'll be talking about what some would say is the most deadly foe in the Next Generation, the Borg. They might try to take over this podcast. I wouldn't let them. So, actually, this was inspired by one of our sister podcasts, To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Where they covered their aspect of the Borg as far as Voyager was concerned. But the Borg, even though they were, some would say, overused in Voyager, they were originated right here as the big bad of TNG. So we're going to start off with the Borg's goals. You know, when the Borg are introduced, it's in the season 2 episode Q Who. I think that's the first one where we get the great Q based pun titles.
Hide and Q.
Yeah.
Oh, Hide and Q. So the second one where we have, they're just keeping it going.
I think originally the pilot was going to be called Encounter at Q Point. So, but never mind.
No, you can't use the rejected titles of our first episode, Philip. That doesn't work. But anyway, Q flings the Enterprise with a flick of his finger all the way over into system J25, where they encounter the Borg. Now, these Borg are very different from Borg we would later see. They were very, very pale, but more in a Data pasty makeup sort of way. And they definitely seem to have a different objective, because their objective seems, at least as John DeLancey points out, or as Q points out, they don't seem to be interested in assimilation. They just seem to be interested in technology, like almost as if, oh, look at that handsome ship right there. Hey, I'd love to beam over to that. Oh, it has people on it. Who cares? But what do you guys think of the change that we would later see in the Borg's behavior from pure technology driven to assimilate this?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you bring that up. I've actually never thought about that, but you are right there in Q Who, which I think is like in every season of Next Generation is the ship flung away to another part of space. I think every season, but anyway,
it seems like it. The writers had a tally mark on the wall, and every O'Brien must suffer, and the ship must get flung at least halfway across the galaxy and back within the same episode. Come on, Voyager.
It was flung in When the Bell Breaks in season 1, where no one has gone before season 1. I mean, I have to make the list here. Someone make that list. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, ship being flung to the Delta Quadrant, that would definitely make a good story. But in Q, you're right. I've never thought about that. The Borg, you know, as Q said, just interested in technology. Basically, they just want to harvest new technology. That's all they care about. No, I've never thought about that. That is interesting.
I just watched Q Who this week, and it stands in very stark contrast to what we know of the Borg later on in TNG. Like, you know, they shoot the one Borg in engineering after Picard tells Worf, and Worf's like, I'm not doing it. So he gives it to Ensign No Name behind him to do it.
It's like it's past the buck right there. Yeah. Worf's like, you know, fire phasers. Worf's like, fire phasers. And the Ensign's like, firing phasers. And then promptly gets thrown across the room.
Yeah. And then the other Borg shows up and just starts like taking pieces off of him. Like it's like really weird. Like, and there's no, like you mentioned, no mention of assimilation. And, but it's only one episode that we get it, that we get this like technology obsessed Borg until they become more of like a perfection obsessed Borg. I guess we don't really know that until later on, but that they're trying to complete themselves, I guess. So it doesn't bother me too much. It's just kind of a strange anomaly.
There's a hole in their heart that only technology can.
Yes, Borg are the Jerry Maguire of You Complete Me. Well, I think one cool thing about the Borg that you mentioned with the self-destruct or whatever you want to call it function, you know, I think the Borg are basically the modern version. Like, they're basically begging to make a video game. You know, you play a video game, you shoot the bad guy, they just disappear. See? And that's what happens in real life with the Borg. You kill a Borg, they just whoosh, and then you're done. And I think they leave some coins behind, possibly, but that's about it.
We have that nasty stain in the carpet that Argyle has to clean out. But, you know, besides that,
that ship cleans itself.
Yeah, this is season two. Argyle is way past gone at this point.
That's right. We've promoted Lieutenant Junior Grade to Chief Engineer.
Well, the other interesting aspect about, you know, Q Who is
he's a godlike creature who appeared in the pilot. yeah, that's who Q is.
Oh, I see what
is
you
it
did
like
there.
Q? Is it like the Doctor? It's like we don't say his name. He doesn't have a name. It's just Q or the Q.
Exactly.
You know. Anyway, but it's interesting how mysterious the Borg are in this episode, and thank goodness we had Guinan with us. Otherwise, we would have known nothing about these guys. But then I was just thinking, in contrast to the next time they show up in Best of Both Worlds, where it's all, we are the Borg. Oh, thanks for introducing yourselves now. That would have been great on the first encounter, but no, you just had to, you know, you're defensive has been analyzed. We will own you, noobs. that's basically their opening line right there.
And another thing is too that, you know, I don't know if we wanted to bring it up, but like in the neutral zone, you know, earlier on when TNG is actually is kind of building to it, like the Borg like apparently scoop entire like cities and civilizations off the ground and like.
Someone needs to make a t-shirt of a Borg cube with like a backhoe arm coming out of it, like a Tonka truck backhoe arm that's ready to just scoop, you know.
Well, that's my ice cream scoop. It's like it has a Borg ship connected to it. That's how
Is that like the Enterprise pizza cutter?
Exactly.
You take a scoop and you scoop a cube and you get a Borg sphere.
But yeah, so like we get these like differing motive, you know, early on, especially in Q Who, obviously in Q Who, we get this. Like you can tell, it's not where it wasn't a fully fleshed out idea. Like they were just like, we're going to introduce these people, and then maybe kind of later on fill them out a little bit more, which is what we see in Best of Both Worlds done brilliantly. In Q Who, it's more like there's this really big menace. We've kind of alluded to this before, but here they are, and we want to show you, hey, there are things out there that our crew is not ready to deal with.
Yeah, I think just getting to the basics of it. I mean, the Borg is the ultimate enemy. And I mean, obviously, there's so much we can talk about, but I think with the Q Who, I mean, that whole episode is very interesting where, you know, Q wants to be a member of the crew and Picard's like, go away, even though we're out to explore strange new worlds and I'm telling this big, powerful thing to go away. But anyway.
He'd pretty much invite any other alien onto the ship.
Serve
but
them tea
you.
And
that's
crumpets,
how much we despise you.
But you know, here it is, the Borg. They don't care about diplomacy because, you know, that's the whole TNG, right? You know, TNG is just Picard talking people to death. But But, you know, here's one where you can't talk to them, you can't reason with them. They just want to take, destroy, and that's the Borg. And I think that this actually Q-Who, you know, when the first encounter with the Borg almost reminds me of, like, Enterprise, because it's like, oh, well, we're in a new sector of space. Let's start exploring. Let's say hi. How y'all doing?
Here's a postage stamp with my the coordinates of our home world. would you accept my friend request, new alien that I just met?
But
that's very true. There are a lot of parallels.
And then I think the fact that
not the episode parallels, but
which did have the Borg,
the parallels with
a reference in it,
with Riker super
exactly. But you know, with that end of Q-Who, where you have them destroying, how many people died?
I think 18.
18, and they carved out that piece of the
47.
Hole,
and
grabbed it,
which was awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, and this was sort of like, I mean, I don't think we really had major casualties, fatalities on TNG before, but this is not fake. I mean, that whole wonderful speech by Q at the end, you know, Picard's like, did we really have to have this cost? And Q's like, hey, it's not safe out here. You can't take a bloody nose. Go back home where it's safe. And I think that's sort of like, you know, we kind of think of TNG as being, you know, very, you know, optimistic, but this one was like, there are bad things out there and we will have to deal with that. Well, because I think, you know, you have the Borg cube introduced, and you have, you know, the Enterprise, you know, shooting every weapon, which is one of those cool shots where you actually see the Enterprise shooting all of its weapons, and, you know, the Borg cube is damaged, but then it just keeps on going and keeps on going, like Q said. And I mean, to me, and I know we'll talk about other episodes here in a second, but, like, you know, it's the ultimate enemy and they just keep coming, and that was one Borg cube, you know, at least with Q-Who. Yeah. Who knows if there...
What if there's a fleet of this? I mean, we'd be so, so in trouble.
I know. I mean, it's not like it would be some sort of tiny Federation ship in the middle of hundreds of cubes and somehow survive. That would be ridiculous.
If I was a Borg tactical drone, I think what I would do is I would... Let's see. 1, 2, 3. Let's see. 9... I don't know. I can't do the mental math, but I would bring enough cubes where I could literally make a giant cube around the Enterprise, like, and just surround it on all sides, and it could literally, and then just assemble.
Is this like the Power Ranger version of the Borg?
like a
Megazord tactical cube.
But that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing that you know, Voyager does wrong with the Borg, and that's the thing about the Borg. It's like it literally takes. Like, the Borg, the one Borg cube in Best of Both Worlds comes in and takes out all of Earth's defense forces. And in Wolf 359, it destroys the whole fleet. And it's like, this makes no sense. Like, and then all of a sudden we learn that there are different kinds of cubes that are even more powerful.
You enter their space and you actually expect to get through?
Yeah.
I mean...
It's absurd.
Well, it reminds me of, like, the beginning of First Contact, where, like, Riker's like, how many cubes? And they're like, one. There's always one. Why would there be more than one? Yeah.
It's either zero or one. That's how the cube operates. Well, yeah, so it's a great introduction to a character, very full of mystery and, you know, and again, a great reason to watch season one, because you get Q introduced and all of his tricksterness, and you would have missed that if this was your first, if you had caught that. Moving on to the main, I think, episode where the Borg are featured has to definitely be The Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and Part 2, which It's only the second time that these villains come back, but it's been long enough. I mean, this was kind of mid season 2 that they were first introduced, and it's not till end of season 3, the finale of season 3, that they come back.
Yeah, and the interesting thing that actually goes throughout the Star Trek franchise of, you know, through all the series, is that in a weird way, we have to thank Q for introducing us to the Borg. Though I think it cuts both ways, because, like, did they know about us because of that encounter? But anyway, but that, you know, we had time to prepare, you know, what little good it did us,
right?
In the end, but, you know, it, that we had time to prepare. So, I mean, we still weren't ready by the time of Best of Both Worlds came along, but you had at least Shelby, you know, who got those admirals out of the way and set things right and got the task force going.
Got us on track.
Send a subspace message to Admiral Hansen. We have engaged the Borg.
Well, it's such a quotable episode, too. I mean, there's so many great, you know, great lines coming out of it. You know, some weird, weird lines, you know, but well, and another interesting point is I won't go to say that this is the first time in television history, but definitely in Star Trek. And you, after this, you definitely saw more of this pop up, but the whole cliffhanger end of a season to the beginning of the next season. I mean, it was, I mean, obviously not the first time, but just eloquently done in this episode where, you know, I mean, we love that moment so much. We put it at the end of every episode of Earl Grey. And that's just, I mean, that's been one of the best things about the Blu-ray releases is you just hear all this great backstory of that summer, the summer between season 3 and season 4 of Next Gen, and how everyone was just losing their minds over the fact that Picard was a Borg and Riker was shooting at him.
He is a Borg. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the best of both worlds are certainly cemented. Like, it was funny, I don't know if you meant to say this on purpose, Darren, but you said this character and not characters. You know, what are the Borg? Are they, is that one character? Because, you know, is it that collective consciousness and just one? But I mean, and there's so many, I mean, I think really to me, the Borg, oh, not to me, I'm sure to many people, the Borg are really the scariest villain for so many reasons. One is that they're faceless. I mean, yes, you see the drones and the whatever, yeah. But it's an idea. I mean, if you want to use like the metaphor of terrorism or whatever, but like it's not just one being or one you know government or one even the Borg Queen. When we want to talk about that, is this the idea of the Borg? You know, that's the enemy, and you can't destroy an idea.
And they just, I think it's the other big aspect of that is, they are removing our humanity at a basic level. There are individuality.
Yeah, because that's the threat. I mean, you know, the Klingons or the Cardassians, they might torture you or kill you or whatever. But the Borg will keep you whole, but they'll scoop out your insides and turn you against them.
With their ice cream scoop.
With their mental ice cream scoop and turn you pale. And I think, obviously, what Jean-Luc went through as Locutus and obviously they took assimilation throughout the Star Trek series. I mean, that's really, really, really powerful. I mean, not to get too serious and on a down note, but that, I mean, that's a, you know, what Picard went through. That's pretty powerful.
Not to be too, you know, too, crass about it, I guess, but it's essentially mind rape. That's what we're told is what it is, right? I mean, it's someone forcibly taking who you are outside of you, removing it, and then just sending you on your way. Now you are no longer who you were. You do what we want you to do. But you're still there, kind of in a way. And
and we're turning you against your friends and your family, and you have no choice but to comply.
Yeah, to turn a phrase. Because it's interesting, because I think the Borg myth, I don't know if it changed or whatever throughout, you know, a little DS9, but not really, but between TNG and Voyager about what does it mean to be a Borg? Because at least what we know from Locutus and Picard is that he remembers everything, that he was still there, even though, you know, the Borg were giving him the directions and he was Locutus. And in family, he's like, you know, I was there and I tried to fight them, but I couldn't. I wasn't strong enough, but they made me do it. And they took everything I had. And just, I mean, that's the worst villain out there. I mean, shoot me with a Klingon disruptor, but assimilating me, I mean, that's...
Shoot me with a Verderon T disruptor. Exactly. I mean, I'll take that over assimilation.
And isn't it interesting, Picard, you know, mentions... I wasn't strong enough, but Picard is the only Borg that we ever see, ever, even including Voyager and everything, that actually shows human emotion when he's a Borg, right? Like in Best of Both Worlds 2, when he has that tear, when he knows what he's doing. He is being complete, but he's like completely aware of what's happening, but also completely helpless to stop it. But it's interesting, I think, that he is the only person that we ever see do that.
I thought it was something about littering, an anti-littering message he was doing there. But anyway, everyone who lived in the 70s is laughing.
You know, it's also the fact that he is Picard. I mean, and Picard at that point, you know, I wouldn't say he was the most beloved character, but I've heard it said that this really bonded the fan base with Picard because they got to see him as a person with flaws and with a struggle. And before he was just, you know, the diplomat, the bald guy, you know, and now he's
British Frenchman.
The man who's gone. Yeah, the British Frenchman who's gone through something terrible. And we've watched him go through it. And afterwards, you just, you know, you just want to give him a cup of tea.
and it's interesting, again, how the Borg mythos has changed, and for better or for ill, I'll let others debate. Because, you know, once we got to First Contact, even, you know, so we still did it in the TNG verse. But, you know, First Contact and on the Voyager, where it's just sort of instant assimilation, you know, the tubes go in your neck and you're Borg like that. But we saw with Locutus, he basically had two phases. He basically has that pre-assimilation or assimilation phase one. And the tear part was sort of assimilation phase two, when you saw the drill going in his head and his color changes pale, which is usually my color. And, you know, the arm being it.
Are you a Borg, Philip?
I'm not a Borg. And you know, the arm gets attached and all that. So, but yeah, I mean, just the powerful, and again, not to linger on it, but like, you know, the nightmares that stayed with him and that, you know, this didn't go away the next episode or the next season or the next movie.
No, you're right. And that transition, I mean, we've spoken before how, you know, family is almost the unofficial trilogy of the Best of Both Worlds, because it directly deals with the aftermath, and especially with Picard just dealing with, I mean, overall he recovers remarkably fast for what he's gone through.
And then we also see, not to, just to tie the bow with everyone, and I'll lean on Daniel for this one, in the DS9 emissary, how others perceive him with the Sisko, you know, when they meet for the first time, because all Sisko can see, it's been a while, so I'm leaning on you, all Sisko can see is Locutus before him.
Yeah. Oh, I love that part of Emissary.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, he totally obviously blames, and rightfully or not so, but he blames Picard for everything that happened there, which makes sense, because it was his knowledge. It was his experience. It was what he knew and what was in his head that caused the deaths of thousands of people.
No, it's true. And it, and I mean, the blame is his, yet it wasn't his fault. I mean, it's that double life's not fair, you know, standard of, and that's definitely something that Picard has to live with.
And then that moment in the drumhead, during that interrogation, and then the question just stops, and then Sati just goes, "Have you fully recovered from the Borg?" And he's like, so defensive, "Yes, I have fully recovered from the Borg." Yes.
But to be fair, we do find out in First Contact that he has not fully recovered from the Borg. So,
well, moving on to the next instance of the Borg is the following season in Season 5, we have iBorg. No, it is not Steve Jobs' latest product release. It is Hugh, one of the first Borgs we've seen, as you know, aside from Picard, who has a name. and I mean, Geordi just didn't listen to the first rule of pet ownership. Don't give it a name, because as soon as you give it a name, you get attached.
It's the lobster
and then,
effect.
Oh, it's just downhill from there. But this is such an interesting episode because, I mean, one, just the acting by the character of Hugh is great. I mean, he's really the first Borg we see acting. I mean, I'm not counting Picard just because that's Picard acting to be a Borg, or Patrick Stewart, as it were. But this is, you know, this is pulling off the layers of the Borg, but in a good way. Like, they're still acting the way they should be. They're not changing themselves. It's just, this is what a Borg separated from the collective would be like. They're scared, you know, they're not upset about their life. They're like, this is just what I am. This is just what I do. Like, let me go back.
It's such a fascinating episode because we do get to see, like, you know, and a lot of the focus is clearly on Geordi and Picard and how they interact with him. But we get to see, like, all of the characters. Well, not all of them, but a lot of the characters and how, you know, we see Guinan's response. We see Beverly's response. We see obviously Picard and Geordi's response. We see, like, we get a whole sense of how all of these different characters have to interact with the Borg, and it's really, really interesting. It's a really, really well done episode, I think. Like, it is one of the few times where you kind of peel back a little bit of the mystery of the big baddie, and it's not harmful to them in any way. It doesn't demystify them. It doesn't, like, lower their threatening level. I think it's very effective at that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I know To the Journey talked about with their
To the Journey with their
Voyager episode, because even they admitted, you know, perhaps a little too overused. I mean, other than Seven of Nine, you can't say she was overused because she's a main character. But I think the tricky parts when you have such a big baddie like the Borg, I mean, the part of their scariness, like you said, is the unknown. They're just this big enemy. They assimilate you. They destroy you. That's all we know. They don't have any subsystems. They don't have any political, economic, social structures. We don't know anything about them. And then the danger is once you learn more, then things become less scary. You know, it's turning on the light at night so you see what's in the closet or under the bed, you know, once you see it.
Well, the trick is revealing just enough so you realize it's actually much, much worse. But not too much. Well, and that's a good point that I'd forgotten to circle back on. You know, this is a villain that was almost designed for Kirk, but because it went up against Picard, it made it that much more powerful. Because think about it. Like you just said, it's a villain that doesn't have an agenda, doesn't want power, just wants to attack you. What would Kirk do? He would shoot it. He'd immediately attack it. He would just go full bore on it. But because it's encountered by Picard, who is the diplomat, who is, you know, the negotiator and the maker of first contact, he is out of water in this scenario because his strengths are pretty much voided by this enemy.
Well, I know standard orbit folks would probably say that Kirk would just talk it to death, but because I think with the Borg, I think the way TNG uses the Borg and perhaps the other series too, is that, you know, when you're faced, and we've talked about this a little bit before, but these are the great moral questions, you know. I'm trying to think of like the West Wing, you know, their days with an absolute light and an absolute wrong in those days always end in body counts. But, you know, but there's still a lot of gray here, shades of gray, because when you're dealing with the Borg, Picard again and again, and even Janeway.
Like the Borg's gray
exactly.
skin.
Even Janeway has to make these decisions, but Picard has to, you know, how far am I going to go? Am I going to stay to the principles of the Federation, or do we throw out the rule book because these people could overtake our society? Do I inject Hugh with this virus? Do I use weapons of mass destruction to annihilate or to commit genocide? You know, what's acceptable when you're faced with, you know, if you want to say terrorism or whatever, but with this big enemy that has no face, that has no purpose, that has no negotiation.
And it's so interesting because Borg is, it is TNG's version of In the Pale Moonlight. It really is. And it's like, you know, people don't see it that way a lot of the times because Picard makes a very different decision than Sisko does in that episode. And I love that episode in Deep Space Nine, but it just shows the differences of philosophy between TNG and Deep Space Nine.
You are an individual.
It's not a fake.
That's great, Daniel. I'm just now totally picturing that episode of iBorg with Picard starting in his ready room or in his quarters, giving a dictation to the computer and talking about his interaction with the Borg. Oh, I'm getting chills. Like, that would be awesome if that's the direction it had gone.
I think one of the most interesting things, and I've heard it said this either, you know, bad or good, so I assume there's a little controversy here, about Guinan's reaction. Because we have basically Guinan being the racist Wesley in this episode, you know, about, you know, how do I deal with this thing, Q, who destroyed, literally destroyed my civilization, my people, scattered us throughout, you know, like the seven tribes or whatever, you know, here's a thing, and why should I respect it? Why should I understand it? It's a thing that kills, and yet she has to be, you know, 'cause she's always the understanding person who's providing the way for every other member, but now she's in that position, and then some people say, like, I don't know if that's whatever, but it's certainly an interesting aspect to see Guinan have to confront her, you know, feelings.
To me, it just shows that Guinan is like mysterious and you know, as much as we don't know about her, she's still a person, and like her entire race was decimated by the Borg, and like that's a fairly traumatic thing to have to go through, and you know, they're scattered across the universe, their homeworld was destroyed, and so I agree with you, like Guinan of all people should probably be above that kind of attitude, but on the other hand, she's gone through something that most people have not, I think.
I mean, she stabs Q with a fork, so she still has some issues with a lot of things.
Now, the final episode that features the Borg in The Next Generation is, again, a season 6/season 7 two-parter of Descent. And we get probably the weakest of the Borg episodes in TNG, because it's more of a Data Borg or
data lore.
Yeah. It's a Data Borg lore all kind of thrown together. And this is when you started peeling a little bit too much away. I mean, I picture that scene of the Borg, you know, in the little catacombs, and they're kind of all, you know, dysfunctional and shorting out because of the experiments that Lore has been giving. And by then, all of a sudden, the Borg just aren't as scary quite as much. Like, that they just, I don't know. They don't show up in, you know, a cube. You know, they're not, you know, that's their thing.
What shape do you even call that?
That's a drunk cube.
A drunk cube. I just actually just watched these two episodes on my rewatch like last week, and I agree with, I mean, I definitely agree. I don't like these episodes hardly at all. There's not a lot that I like about it, except the fact that what I love about this episode, I think it's amazing that we should talk about, is the fact that the TNG crew goes to the command center where Zordon and Alpha 5 are, which I think a lot of people.
It's such a great use of that building.
It is. I don't think it devalues the Borg at all, because we're told very clearly that it's a splinter cell faction, whatever, which I guess in a way does to devalue the Borg, because they're not supposed to have those kinds of things.
You're seeing the Borg bleed, and once you see your enemy bleed, it kind of starts to change the way you view them in your mind. Like, before, the Borg had just been this unstoppable force, and yes, they could be attacked, and yes, they could be slowed down and even destroyed, but there's just going to be another cube. Like, how do you go about, I mean, who would even consider trying to destroy the entire Borg race? Like, it just would never happen, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, I think I like Descent, you know, because I know some people don't like it, but I would say to people who hate on Voyager, we ruined the Borg first, so leave Voyager alone. I think that's the power of the Borg. Once you make them individuals, then they're just, you know, aliens with robot arms and red light pointer eyes.
They're not even a shock group of, you know, enhanced humanoids. They don't know how to do anything together. So when they're individuals, like, it's not even just that there are many of them or even that they're enhanced, it's that they're connected. Without that connection, they are nothing.
Yeah, and it's also like zombies. Like, the Borg, part of their threat comes from the volume of Borg that there are. Yeah. Like, it's the fact that you can shoot 15 of them and there are still going to be 1500 of them behind them that you can't do anything about, that that's the problem. So when you're dealing with a splinter cell of a few dozen Borg, like, whatever, it's not really very threatening.
How much more interesting would the Walking Dead be if the zombies adapted? The shotgun's not working anymore. They've adapted. They've adapted.
That's true. That's another wrinkle in the Borg is, yes, you could kill 15, but then the 16th one is adapted, and that one could take you out because you can't shoot him now.
Except unless you have a machine gun.
That's true. But, I mean, I'm sure they could eventually... let's just...
a holographic machine gun.
So as after this descent, the next time we do see the Borg is in First Contact, but we're gonna jump over that to, you know, the series that really carried the Borg. Well, let's say they carried them the rest of the way through their life as a villain on Star Trek. But Voyager Borg versus TNG Borg. Again, I highly recommend listening to The Journey for their episode on the Borg, because they do cover it much better than we could in how Voyager interacts with this species. But I think the biggest difference, besides the way that they act, is you know, their cube shopping, because apparently there's a boutique of cubes that just spits out all sorts of different configurations and designs.
Congratulations, you've leveled up. You can now get access to a new cube.
Yeah. Would you like to upgrade to a tactical cube? Or how about one that looks like a big torpedo? But is, I think the biggest difference, though, which again was brought from TNG, be it the movies, is the look. The Borg in even Descent, which is several years later and probably with a bit more of a budget, as it is a two-parter that was most likely shot all at once, the Borg are still just kind of the pasty wetsuit guys. You know, they just, there's more of them, and you're able to see more, you know, variation, but they just, man, there's something though about that sticky skin. Like, everyone got a freaking red laser after First Contact bolted to their head. That was like, they found a cache of red lasers in a system that they assimilated, and everyone got one bolted to their head. But I think visually, though, what do you guys think of the visual change in Voyager First Contact Borg?
Well, I think Tristan put into The Journey put an interesting theory, which I never thought about. I don't know if I agree with him, but I think it's interesting to think about, where his belief, or in his headcanon, was that TNG Borg are sort of like one phase of the Borg, and they sort of evolved to the look of First Contact and Voyager, which I never thought about that, because he's saying, like, you know, if you go back to the past, you know, and showed previous Borg, they would look like TNG Borg, which I never thought about. I just thought, yeah, you know, budget, money.
Well, except for they didn't look like TNG Borg in Enterprise.
Except that they were First Contact Borg. So that's not... Yeah.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I don't like thinking about time travel. It just...
Don't think about that episode, because it's going to get you a real big headache.
But I mean, I don't know. To me, once you see First Contact and Voyager Borg, you get spoiled, and it's hard to look back at Q-Who. But it never bothered me. Of course, I mean, maybe I just have suspension of disbelief and all that stuff. But I definitely think, you know, because there's no identity, right, with the Borg. That's what makes them so scary. They're just white and black and robot arms and red lights, and that's it. And I think, you know, once you go towards the assimilation and you can see which species was assimilated, it's cool. But I mean, and again, I don't know if we're going to argue that the Borg mythos stayed constant and try to mishmash this all together, or just say, like, yeah, they changed their minds. Because, like, for instance, in Best of Both Worlds, we saw maturation chambers, little baby Borg.
Right. Well, we do know that, you know, there are baby Borg that also joined the crew of the Intrepid Voyager. But yeah, I think that's a big difference, though, because in Q-Who, they're still figuring out this species. The writers are still developing this, but they're smart and they don't explain everything. I mean, they didn't find a book on the Borg that is just sitting there on a coffee table. I mean, even with Guinan, you know, I was surprised she hadn't jumped into an escape pod by the time they said, oh, we're going to beam over there. I would have been like, what? Get me out of here. This is ridiculous. You don't even understand what these people can do. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that there's just never been... I mean, I don't know. I would say that they're the scariest enemy in all of Star Trek. And I don't know, maybe someone else would argue against that. But I mean, I think, you know, that's the pen, that's the biggest enemy ever, ever in Star Trek. I mean, you can't, I was going to say you can't beat the Borg. Obviously, the captains in Species 8472 have, but I mean, you know, you can't beat the Borg. So
this isn't the To the Journey podcast, though, so we don't have to talk about that. I do actually think that the Borg are Star Trek's like Joker or Lex Luthor. Like I think that they are the race and the being and the concept that can come back time and time again, even after being defeated. They can come back time and time again and actually pose a real threat and be a consistent
It's called regeneration.
I agree. I do. I think it's the best enemy concept that Star Trek has ever come up with. And I think that, you know, when the next time we see Star Trek, I hope that we see more Borg for sure.
Yeah, I think that's really did one of the things that is ingrained in TNG, because like TOS, it's Klingons and Kirk and phasers, but I think TNG is, you know, Voyager continued it, and that's fine, but we're the ones who did Resistance is Futile, You Will Be Assimilated, and you know, all the stuff with First Contact and the Borg Queen and all that stuff. But I mean, that is TNG, is the Borg, even though they appeared, like you
that's
said,
true.
Three, depending how you count it, four episodes, and then the movie.
No, that's very true. I mean, TNG established the mythos of the Borg, and, you know, like any good mythos, it was expanded upon and you know, changed and, you know, drawn together. But I think that core from, like you said, from You Will Be Assimilated to, you know, I Am Locutus, I think it definitely was better than the Ferengi. Let's just say that. I think we need to thank the Ferengi for being such a terrible, terrible season one villain that they just had to go back to the drawing board and come up with something way better. And boy, did they. Well, it's been interesting talking about the Borg, but this is just one of the many topics we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Pitching a piece of the action movie.
I think we can definitely say that the Transformers
though.
Planet doesn't work. They might go for that. Would you go for that, Drew?
I mean, personally, I would shy away from it, because then you'd be...
Or would you shy away
it would
from
be,
it?
You're a bad person.
Earl Grey.
William T. Riker.
Imagine now if he had come back with a goatee or mutton chops. We could have been a very different Riker.
Hipster Riker. Number one, are you wearing glasses?
No, it's Geordi's visor.
I'm reading a pad that you've never heard of before.
The Ready Room.
Inside a Lost Time with Mark Cushman.
But something else that you'll find out in book two is that they almost didn't have Leonard Nimoy and Mr. Spock for season two of Star Trek. His agent wanted more money for Leonard, and for good reason, because when he signed on to do the series, he was supposed to be a supporting actor, and yet he was getting more fan mail than even William Shatner, who was the star of the show, yet only a fraction of the money.
The Orb.
Move Along Home as a TOS episode.
Sisko comparing First Contact to dating girls felt like something that Kirk would do as well, you know, teaching Charlie Evans about girls in Charlie X, something like that.
To the Journey!
Voyager on Blu-ray.
I know that there's been some outtakes done, because you can find clips of them on YouTube, but there's gotta be more. And I wanna see them all!
Warp 5.
Andorians on Enterprise.
And so they took this idea where they had antenna, and they took this idea where they were blue and from someplace cold, or I don't even know if they were someplace cold when they were on the TOS, and they just made everything better.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear recap.
I think when you look at the work that was done on Deep Space Nine, what becomes apparent is a group of people who do not feel like they need to do what the original series did in order to accomplish what the original series accomplished.
Melodic Treks.
Apparently, at one point, Patrick Stewart felt he might be able to actually play on screen himself, although he was delicately pointed out to him, Bros Martin, that he wasn't up to that standard quite yet.
Literary Treks.
Peaceable Kingdoms with Peyton Ward.
I don't really remember why I was the one chosen to bat cleanup, other than the fact that I think Margaret, our editor, wanted Picard and the Enterprise E to factor into the final installment, and she had already tapped me to write that story.
Matter Stream.
Star Trek Axanar with Alec Peters and Richard Hatch.
If you've ever experienced war or any kind of conflict where everything is life and death, there's a certain kind of resolve, truth, experience that you come to that I don't think too many people can understand or ever really empathize with.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You will find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files directly from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory to get all the links. Now, if you'd like to share your thoughts on today's Earl Grey, just go to trek.fm/contact. From there, you can choose send a show and choose Earl Grey. That will come to all three of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our listeners on our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, before we go, I'd like to ask you to please support our sponsors who make it possible for us to bring Earl Grey and the other shows here to you each week. Audible.com is a great way for you to read all the books you've wanted to read but just never had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. There are many next-generation books available, including The Devil's Heart, read by Gates McFadden, and Q-in-Law, read together by both John DeLancey and Majel Barrett. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial, to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read, or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. And we thank you and Audible for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. Also, help us continue to bring Earl Grey to you each week by getting your alien badges and art prints, featuring original illustration by Toba Ushi. You'll find them at trek.fm/donate. And your support helps us to pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring this show to you each week. Now, if people want to discuss your phaser EM band regeneration tactics, Philip, where would they find you?
They can find me, Darren, at Sleep, Darren. Sleep. I mean, they can find me at...
Is that of an underscore?
They can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant. That's NC, like North Carolina.
And what about you, Daniel? If people want to learn about your barrel roll maneuvers, how would they reach
I you? Do barrel roll quite a bit on Twitter. So it would be 1UpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
Is that because you're an individual, Dan, not a member of the collective?
Exactly, yeah.
He is Dan of one.
Exactly right, yep.
And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. And you can also listen to me on my other podcast, The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, which is available on iTunes. Well, I just got the Battle of Wolf 359 documentary downloaded from Starfleet. Is that too soon?
Too soon.
It's too soon, isn't it? Okay. Well, I'll be in my quarters. Live long and prosper.
Make it so.
Engage.
Fire.